If you have your Bibles, turn in your Bible to Revelation chapter 12. That's where we're going to be again this week. And while you're turning to Revelation chapter 12, well, again, we'll look at our chart just to fix our minds on where we are. This is the chart, the rapture, the protection of Israel after the covenants made by the Antichrist in Daniel 9:27. He breaks the covenant, begins a persecution of Israel, and that's what Jesus called the Great Tribulation. Once the abomination of desolation occurred, he says, you better flee to the mountains. We have another chart, and by the way, I have this chart if anybody needs one. We already talked about the two witnesses. The two witnesses are here during the first half of the tribulation when the Antichrist does manifest himself, as Jesus said, in the abomination of desolation. These two witnesses will be killed. There's much rejoicing among the earth dwellers, and then they're taken to heaven. And Antichrist begins his reign of terror for 3.5 years. Now, he is really empowered by Satan, who we looked at last week as the dragon in Revelation chapter 12. This week we're going to focus on really the focal event of Revelation 12 is the war in heaven. The war in heaven causes Satan to be cast out of heaven, which creates rejoicing among those who are in heaven, but great wrath upon those who are upon the earth. So Satan is cast out of heaven. He comes to earth. He's going to work through a man who has been prepared, and that man is going to persecute Israel for that last 3.5 years. So the time of Israel's protection is over, and the time of Israel's persecution begins. So Revelation 12 and 13 go together as a unit, and they go together as a unit because one flows into the other. The dragon is the one who empowers the beasts. And there are two great signs in Revelation 12. We saw those last week. There's two great beasts in Revelation 13. That's where we're going next week. We saw this last week. There's two heavenly signs. And the two heavenly signs are the great sign is the woman, and the other sign is the great red dragon. The woman is the nation Israel. Now, a sign, when the word sign is used, it's a very specific term in the Bible. A sign is something that represents something else. So you have to say, okay, there's a sign, it's a woman. What does the woman represent? The woman represents the nation Israel. We saw that last week. What does the great red dragon represent? The great red dragon represents Satan himself. Yeah, and we saw last week he's the chief of the cherubim, he's the serpent, he's the great deceiver, he's the accuser of the saints. This week, as a result of the war in heaven, Satan is going to lose his position. He takes that very badly, and it upsets him. So as a result, he's going to persecute the woman, who's Israel. And he's also the power behind all of the nations that have existed up to this point, including ours. So we don't want to ever get to the position where we say any nation in the world is exempt from the activity of Satan, and Satan actually working through the nations of the world, including the nation Israel. I mean, when Jesus came and ministered on earth for his 3.5 years, it was Satan and his minions in control of the ship of state of Israel. And it was through the power and activity of Satan that they put Jesus on a cross. Satan looked like for a few days he had won. 3 days later he finds out he's lost as Jesus rises from the dead. And you see that same kind of repetition with the two witnesses. You know, the world rejoices because the two witnesses are dead. But 3.5 days later they rise up from the dead. And I think many of them gave glory to God as a result of them seeing them rise up. But the power behind the nations are as depicted as 7 heads, which are 7 kingdoms, and 10 horns, which is the final kingdom. And we said these 7 heads are depicted by any nation that was actively opposed the nation Israel, starting with Egypt. 6 of these are all historical. The 7th is yet to come. Typically, Bible teachers call that the revived Roman Empire, because the Roman Empire has never really ceased to exist. The treaty that formed the European Union, or the European Federation as we see it today, was signed by a treaty called the Treaty of Rome in 1964. And ever since Charlemagne was crowned by Pope Leo in 800 AD, the world has sought the revival of the Roman Empire, what was called at that point the Holy Roman Empire. Now, what's depicted here in chapter 12 is this beast that has seven heads. The seven heads have the seven crowns on them, and appears on the last head with ten horns. This is depicting Satan before the Antichrist appears. That this beast depicted in chapter 12 is depicting Satan and his power before the Antichrist appears. And that'll make more sense to you next week. So I'll just leave it at that. What we have then, 12:1 through 17, we have the heavenly powers versus flesh and blood. And I lift that little phrase right out of Ephesians, where Paul says, our fight is not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual forces, the forces of the powers of the air. Right. Let's go to chapter 12 then and read these 17 verses, because I'm gonna focus on the war in heaven, and you'll see that focus as we read through it. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his head were seven diadems. King James has crowns. These are kingly crowns, crowns of rulers. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child. And she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God, so that there she might be nourished for 1,260 days. How long is that?
3.5 years.
Right. And there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place for them found in heaven. And the great red dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ has come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. And they did not love their life even to death. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell on them, in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth, he persecuted the woman and gave birth to the male child. And the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman, in order that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time. How long is that? Oh, isn't that something, how that fits together? From the presence of the serpent. And the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman, so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon poured out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her offspring, who kept the commandments of God and who hold the testimony of Jesus. So that is the chapter, and again, the focal point, the point of the confrontation, is the war in heaven. Had Satan not been cast out of heaven, there would not be the confrontation between himself and the woman. So the opposition starts in 12:4, as we read that verse. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven, and he threw them down to earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she did give birth, he might devour her child. This opposition starts with Adam and Eve and continues on to this day. And we saw last week, we went back and looked at Adam and Eve and the promise that God had given in his cursing the serpent, said, I will put enmity between her seed and your seed, and her seed is going to crush your head, though you will bruise his heel. So we went back to the very beginning. And the first seed of the serpent is Cain, who is also the first child of Eve. The first child of Eve is not the Savior that he promised in Genesis 3:15. It's Cain, who is really going to follow Satan. And 1 John talks about this, if you recall. If you want to ever go back and read about Cain in 1 John. He calls him a son of Satan, a liar, as Satan is from the beginning. Now, Abel, the next son, is the seed of woman. Now, what does Cain do to Abel? But this Abel, who's the seed of woman, is killed, but he's replaced by one called Seth. And that begins actually the line of the seed of the woman from that point on. And in there we find Noah, who's blameless in his time, as the Bible says. Then we come to Abraham, who's called the friend of God. Then we come to Judah, who's called the prince of God, who is also then called Israel, who is now the father of the nation Israel, and the 12 sons, who will become the 12 tribes of Israel. And we've already seen them in the book of Revelation. They're going to be the 144,000. After Judah, and out of Judah comes David, who's the king of Israel. And Jesus is the one who is going to take the throne of David as promised in the book of Samuel. So Jesus, as the Son of God, is the seed of the woman, according to Paul in Galatians, which we looked at last week. When Jesus is born, he's the Son of God. Luke says he's the one who's come to reign on the throne of David to be the king of Israel. Well, what did the Romans put in his head above his cross? King of the Jews. They were right, you know. The Jews didn't like that, but they were right. But at the time he's born, Herod is the king of Israel. Herod is the seed of the serpent. And so when I read verse 4 and say that the dragon stands before the woman, ready to devour the seed of the woman, he's after this guy, Jesus. That's who he's after. And all through history, he's waiting for one to come to be Messiah. And all through Israel's history, they waited for one who would come to be Messiah. And Jesus came and said, I'm it. And what did the nation Israel do? No, you're not. We don't like you. We want somebody more kingly. Now, the woman does give birth in 4 BC. And that's in verse 5. See, it picks up the story. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne. There's all kinds of speculation about who this child is. Does it take much speculation to figure out who this child is? Huh? No. The male child is Jesus. Now, this child has a definite purpose. It's stated, this is very strongly stated in the Greek New Testament when it says, she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule, who is meant to rule. He was born to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. So there's the purpose. He's meant to rule the nations with a rod of iron. That's Psalm 2. Now, the word rule, you might think of like a despot, a tyrant. You know what the word here for rule is not to rule as a king. You know what the word is? It's a fascinating word. It's the word we get our word pastor from this word. The Greek word means to rule or to tend as a shepherd. Now that's going to come up at the end of the study, so I want you to remember that. I'm making this a point because it's going to tie something at the end. He's going to tend as a shepherd, to rule like a shepherd rules. With a rod of iron, when the shepherd carried a rod to keep the sheep gathered and in line and led to the proper place. But that's what he's going to do. Now the next thing it says is the child is caught up to heaven. Now, when does that happen? 33 A.D. So you got to jump from 4 when he's born to 33 when he's caught up. And this is referring to his ascension. And what's interesting here is the word caught up, the same word you find in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, to be snatched away, to be caught up. When the angel blows his trumpet, we will be caught up to be with him forever in the air. Same word. Now, we come to a gap of 2,000 plus years. Verse 5 ends, he's caught up. Now there's a gap of some 2,000 years because 12:6 says what? Then the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she might be nourished for how long? 3.5 years. 1,260 days, right? 3.5 years. That is the second half of the tribulation that we've been talking about since we started the study. As time and half a time, 42 months, 1,260 days, it's the same time frame. This is looking at the future when the nation Israel, this is the nation Israel is going to be protected by God. So the woman, 12:6, the woman fled to the wilderness, to a place prepared by God, nourished for 1,260 days. All right, so there's the time frame of really the last 3.5 years of the tribulation. Now, we're going to go back to verse 7 in chapter 12, and we're going to jump back a little bit, because again, this book is not sequential. It's much to our frustration. Why does she run to the wilderness, and why does she have to have a place prepared, and why does she have to be nourished by God for 1260 days? Because a great war took place in heaven. The greatest of all wars takes place in heaven. Satan and his angels lose access to heaven. That's 7 through 12. There was a war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. Michael is the archangel of Israel. He is Israel's protector. Mentioned in Daniel chapter 10, if you want to go back and look at that. But I'm not going to dwell on that. I just want to make the point that it is Michael waging war with the dragon. This is the same Michael who had an argument with Satan over the body of Moses. And Michael withdrew. But now Michael's not going to withdraw, and the dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place for them in heaven. Now, if you think about it, they're outnumbered as well as not being strong enough, because how many of the angels or the stars of heaven did Satan's tail sweep away? One-third. So it's one-third versus two-thirds, so he's outnumbered by 2-1. So he gets beat. But it says there's no longer a place found for them in heaven. The great dragon was thrown down, the serpent who started in the garden, the devil and Satan, that's the evil one and the deceiver, and that's it says the Satan, the deceiver, who deceives the whole world, he was thrown down to the earth and his angels were thrown down with him. So they're now earthbound. Demons and Satan himself have had access to heaven ever since the beginning of creation, ever since they fell. Very easy to demonstrate in the book of Job that Satan has access to heaven. Paul in the epistles many times makes this reference to Satan being the ruler, the prince, the ruler, the power of the air, the one who is who is the accuser of the brethren. And that's going to say that here in this passage as well. I heard a loud voice in heaven, because now heaven's going to rejoice. Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come because, here's the reason we're very, very close to having Messiah rule the earth. Why? Because the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accuses them before our God day and night. So up until this point, Satan has had access, saying, look at this, look at this, look at this. And of course, we have the advocate, Jesus Christ, who intervenes on our behalf. But how are these people able to stand the accusations of Satan? Because of verse 11. They overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb. Not on our own strength or merit, but because of the blood of Jesus Christ. And because of the word of their testimony. When we speak the word of Jesus Christ and what he did for us, that overcomes the power of Satan. And God uses that gospel to bring men to salvation. And they did not love their life even unto death. This is in the book of Revelation, is that reference to those who are going to give their lives as a result of this, of the persecution that begins actually at the beginning of the tribulation and goes all the way through to the end. So they do not love their life. They love Jesus more than life and are willing to give that even though they die. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. So there's the heaven dwellers and the earth dwellers. They're in opposition. And we did a study on the earth dwellers before, those who are committed to life on earth, who will take the mark of the beast. And he says there, you who dwell in heaven, woe to the earth, rejoicing in heaven, but woe to the earth. Why? And the sea. Why? Because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. So great wrath. So 12:10-12, Satan loses his access. 10:10-12, the heaven rejoices, but woe to those on earth. The devil has great wrath. And the word there in the Greek New Testament is wrath, is passionate fury. Anger that's fueled by emotion and hatred so strong that we call it passionate. What happens as a result is the woman flees. Now what's going on at this point is this is when in time Satan is indwelling this one called Antichrist who's going to take his place in the temple of God, defile the temple, what Jesus called the abomination of desolation. And that's when Jesus says, at that point, you've got to flee to the mountains. He's telling the nation Israel, you've got to flee to the wilderness. And 12:6, says that the woman is going to flee to a place prepared for time, times, and half a time. 1260 days or 3.5 years. And that's, see, this is what Jesus says, the place prepared. Matthew 24:15-16, he doesn't say flee to the mountains because there's a place prepared there for you. He just says you have to flee and hope you're not pregnant and hope it's not Sabbath and hope it's not winter and hope there's nothing to stand in your way and don't even go back to your house. As soon as you hear about the abomination of desolation, you run. Now what Jesus doesn't say is this. It says in Revelation, she's going to be taken on the wings of an eagle. That's a reference right out of Exodus. On the wings of an eagle, 12:6. Exodus 19:4. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians. What happened to the Egyptians? They drowned in the Red Sea. And how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, there wasn't a big eagle that took them across the Red Sea. That's a figure of speech. The eagle, being the most powerful of birds, most jealous of her young, eaglets, who she teaches to fly and feeds them at very high places. This is a bird that's looked upon as being the supreme of all birds, the sovereign of all birds. It's a bird that depicts power and the ability to fly great distances. You know, God says, remember, I bore you on eagle's wings and I brought you out of Egypt. Miraculously. Well, same thing here. Now we find out in Revelation when Jesus says, you flee to the mountains, you're not, and you're going to be on your own, sorry. No. We find out in the book of Revelation, God is going to provide in a miraculous way for this nation in order to protect them. Where's this wilderness? This wilderness, here's the map of Jordan, and here's the map of the Middle East, and Jerusalem is up here at the top, see right here. When Jesus says you're going to flee to the wilderness, when they think of the wilderness, they would think this direction, down past the Dead Sea, down here to this mountainous region, to a place called Petra. And many, many people look at Petra and say, this is a spot that would be perfect for a place to go that would be protected from armies and from invasion. Now, you can say, well, wait, if Satan knows already that they are going to go there, why doesn't he put an army in there and just leave them in there so when Israel comes in, the army just slaughters them all? I don't know. There's all these, I don't know the answers to those questions. Satan knows he's going to get beat. He knows, if he reads the book of Revelation, he knows he's going to end up in the lake of fire. Why didn't he just give up? There's classic denial. He's not going to give up. But this is the region that is depicted as mountainous, and it is a wilderness. And today, there is a map of Petra. If you look at Petra, it's all mapped out. You know, what makes this a perfect place is there's already toilets, cafes, and food shops already there. And so that tells me that this place has really been prepared for somebody to go live because everything is there. There's a visitor center and everything, so they'll be able to just, you know. But here, I want to point out just two things here. There's this, what's called the Seek here, there's the Treasury here, and there's a monastery up here. Now, there's about 2 miles between this entrance and this monastery. So that gives you an idea. 2 miles. So, well, the Sikh looks like this. It's very narrow. It's only about the width, a little wider than a cart. So it'd be very hard to get an army through this little channel. And the temple treasury looks kind of like this. This is like a huge cave in the mountain. Now, this region is filled with caves. There's thousands of caves in the mountains of Petra. And what's interesting, too, this is all red stone. This is in the area of what was called Edom. And Edom is a Hebrew word for red. And Edom is also Esau. Why did he name him Esau? Because he had red hair all over his body. And the monastery is up on the side of a mountain up here about 2 miles from this opening called the Seek. This could be a place that God has prepared for Israel to go to be protected. This mountainous wilderness area has many, many places to go, to run, to hide. But you know what? You just think of the technology we're facing today. And if one of you wanted to, quote, drop off the grid and disappear, how hard would it be? It's almost impossible. Any of you that are computer guys that kind of know what they're able to do, with computers these days, and with any way you move around, with all the cameras around the world that are taking pictures and facial recognition, it's almost impossible. So you can say, even if this place is looks like a fortress that nobody could attack, even at that, it's got to be something miraculous that's going to protect this nation during this time. This is 3.5 years. When Jesus says, when you see the abomination of desolation, flee to the mountains, how many people are going to be in Jerusalem at the time? How many will make it? I don't know. Always be a remnant that are going to survive, right? Whether that is the place they go, they're going to go into the wilderness and they're going to be protected. And Jesus kind of gives the indication you're going to have to run and you're going to be on your own. But I'm sure he knows that's not true. But John gives us very clearly, and remember, John's writing 60 years after Jesus spoke in Jerusalem. John is giving now new revelation, saying they're going to go to a place in the wilderness where God has prepared a place for them, and he's going to protect them for 3.5 years. So there's going to be a group of people who survive physically and will go then into the kingdom. That's that remnant's about. There's going to be a remnant that's going to go into the kingdom. Satan's cast out of heaven, the heavens rejoice, and I can see him as he's falling down, everybody's in heaven going, yay, get out of here, and that adds insult to injury. They're up there having a party because I'm not there anymore. So when he hits the ground, his wrath and rage pours out, and one of the best expressions of that is like water pouring out. And before class we were talking about the flood and the dynamics of water and the raging power of water. So the illustration is water being poured out of his mouth against this woman. Again, the woman is Israel. It's not just a little woman. The woman is Israel. But also in the illustration, if you compare a woman to a dragon, just in our thinking, who seems to be more powerful? The dragon. I mean, the dragon would seem to have the advantage and would, without the power of God, protecting the woman, this little nation Israel. And so his rage pours out against the woman and anyone associated with her. Let's read those verses, 15 through 17. But look, the serpent pours water like a river out of his mouth after the woman so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. He's exercising all the power that he's able to exercise to get rid of her. And 16, the earth, however, helped the woman. And is this actually physically the earth like Petra, this place? Or is it the people of the world decide we're going to help the woman? We're going to do something to help her? I don't know. That'll be clarified at a future date, like when Jesus comes. And the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river. They absorbed the wrath that the dragon, now he calls him the dragon, pours out of his mouth. So one place he calls him the serpent, and the next place he calls him the dragon. So you can put these two things together. You never want to lose sight of who this dragon is and where he starts. In verse 17 it says, the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. Now, this is a direct reference to those who are going to hold the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus, who are going to refuse to submit to the beast of Revelation chapter 13. And because they're going to refuse to submit to him, their lives are in jeopardy. The dragon is going to do everything possible to kill them. He wants to wipe out any remnant that can go in and be the population of the kingdom of the Messiah. His goal is to wipe out the Messiah and anyone associated with him. Because if he can do that, he figures he can win. He's wrong, but he doesn't care. It's just mind-boggling to me that he knows his end and continues on. But this is the point, and this is where the chapter ends, that this dragon is so enraged at the woman. He stood before her for centuries, this nation Israel, trying to devour this one who's going to be Messiah. He finally thinks he's got him, and he gets resurrected, and now he's in heaven, and he can't get at him in heaven. But he can get at those who are on the earth who hold his testimony. So he's going to be opposed to anyone associated with her. Now, what's going on in the world already at this point? What's already happened in the world? The two witnesses have been witnessing in Jerusalem. The 144,000 have already been sealed. They're out into the world witnessing to people and bringing people to salvation. who are now going to be citizens of this coming kingdom. There's already masses of people out there that have already believed in Jesus and holding to his testimony as a result of the testimony of the 144,000. And these are the ones that Satan is going to oppose. Because this book is not sequential, you have to bring it together as you're reading it. So when Jesus does come, what's he going to find? He's going to find people who he will bring into his kingdom, who will serve and be in his kingdom in physical human bodies. And they're going to have children in that kingdom. And he's going to be the king and the ruler of that kingdom. That's what he's talking about in Matthew 25, 31 through 41. This is a long passage about Jesus. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. This is after the tribulation in the book of Matthew. And what's going on as he's sitting on his glorious throne? That's his glorious throne on earth, which is called the throne of David. All the nations are gathered before him. All the nations. And he will separate them like the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. Now remember when I said before that the Son is purposed to rule with the nations with a rod of iron? And I said, what's the word rule there mean? Shepherd? It's the word for shepherd. He's like the shepherd separating the sheep from the goats. Then the king will say to those on his right. Now the king is the same Son of Man up there in verse 31. The king will say to those on his right, who are the sheep, come inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you fed me. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, you brought me in. I was naked, you clothed me. I was sick, you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. All the things that you would do to those who are in desperate need and in dire straits. Now he says to those, the next line doesn't say, well, the sheep bleat back. He's gone from using an illustration of like a shepherd over sheep to real people. And he says, then the righteous will answer them, him and say, Lord, when did we see you like this? And the king will answer them, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, you did it to me. Now, where are the brothers of mine? Where are they? Who are his brothers physically? In this context are three groups of people, three distinct groups of people. This is all taking place on earth. Jesus is on earth. He sits on his glorious throne after the tribulation. This is on earth. And all the nations are brought before him. Now, it says all the nations are brought before him. When it talks about nations, is the goyim. What are goyim? Nations that are not what? Not Jews. Once you see this, this really clears up. There's three groups of people here. He's got one group behind him. He's got the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. The sheep and the goats are the nations. Who are those people behind him? The Jews, the nation Israel, my brothers according to the flesh. Remember how Paul would make a point of that in the book of Romans? He was a son of David according to the flesh, but he's son of God because of his resurrection. So his lineage is that he is the king of Israel. And these brothers are those Israelis who have just been through the tribulation, the most horrible time the world is ever going to see. Jesus himself said there's going to be a tribulation like the world has never seen. And he's got two groups of people now, sheep over here and goats over here. And he's going to say to them, how did you treat those who Satan was after during this terrible time? The sheep are people who risk their lives to take care of this Jewish people. The goats are those who just simply ignored and said, no, we're going to obey the authorities in power, who is Satan and the Antichrist. Those sheep are going to say, no, we're going to protect this people called the Jewish people, and we're going to do whatever we can for them. That's why he says, you saw me. And they say, when did we see you? Well, whenever you took care of one of these Jewish people during this time we've just come out of, that's when you took care of me. Yeah.
So the context is the end times. Yeah, we use that as a principle, talking about the Lord didn't know you, but that's really not the exact meaning.
That's not the meaning of this. The meaning of this is after he returns in the tribulation, to the extent that you did it one of these brothers of mine, you did it to me. We've already seen this happen in modern history in Germany. You go to Israel today, you can go to the Hall of the Righteous. The Hall of the Righteous are those Gentiles who helped Jewish people during the Holocaust. And the Jews honor them. But what did most people in Germany do? They turned their backs. And how was Hitler able to rise to power? He used the Lutheran Church to come to power. But once he got to power, did he have any more use for the Lutheran Church? No. And he killed many of the pastors. We've seen this historically. There were people who were willing to help the Jewish people. There were people who turned their backs and looked the other way. It's going to be the same thing in the tribulation. And when Jesus comes, he's going to sort it all out. There's going to be this great separation. And this is when he goes back to his parable in Matthew 13, when he says, I'm going to separate the wheat from the tares. This is this great separation. Now, he's going to say to those on the right, he says, you know, you're going to enter my kingdom. But then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which prepared for the devil and his angels. So there's the righteous and there's the cursed. Now, this is not a parable. Many people call this the parable of the sheep and the goats. This is not a parable. This is actual fact. This is what's going to happen in the future. This is a judgment that's going to take place. The righteous are going to enter the kingdom. The unrighteous are going to be cast into an eternal torment. So they will have had their time of rest for a while, and their time of protection under the Antichrist for a while. But when it comes to judgment, they're going to be on the losing side. When liberals approach this passage, they say, see, this is what Christians should do. Christianity is social action, and this is what Christianity is all about. It's about a loving God, loving people, through people who love people. Now, what the liberal does when they come to verse 41, then say to those on the left, depart from you, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, the liberal goes, well, that can't be true, because a loving God would never send people into eternal fire. So that's not true. You know, the problem is you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, what Jesus said to the sheep, the way you get into heaven is by your good works, by the way you treat other people. But if you don't do that, don't worry, there's no such thing as an eternal hell, because a loving God would never do that. You can't have it both ways. It's either true or it's not true. Jesus either speaks truth or he's not speaking truth. And of course, this whole passage starts off when he comes in his glory and sits on his glorious throne. That's a future event. That hasn't happened yet. Jesus is not on the throne that is being talked about here. Jesus is functioning as a great high priest in heaven at the right hand of the throne of God. He's not on the throne of David. There is no throne of David in heaven. The throne of David is on earth. That's what the Bible teaches about Messiah coming to rule in his kingdom. You ask the average guy on the street, how is it you get to heaven? Well, I'm a good person. My good works will outweigh my bad works. We know that's not true. We're going to continue on next week with this guy, the beast from the sea.